We need to move to doing this with every word.
For a whole podcast.
Could you imagine?
Welcome back to the clap back.
Yeah, baby.
I would not listen to that podcast. It could be like my favorite people in the world. I think I would be like, you know what?
I don't like clapping that much.
Hottest 100s and thousands, and we have taken control of your radio station.
This is the podcast, and we can talk about the songs which have been deemed hot enough to be in the Triple J Hottest 100. So screw you guys, I'm going home.
My name's Eric Cartman, and I'm one of the four voices you're going to be hearing for the next hour or so. Joining me, once again, Stan Marsh.
Okay, that's me. I was wondering which one I'd be.
Dude, sweet!
Kenny McCormick. And Kyle Brovlovsky.
Screw you, I can't do the voice.
That's Cartman!
No, I know.
Cancel the podcast. Nathan can't do
Shut
it.
Shut the fuck up, Cartman!
There we go.
There we go.
It's okay, man.
I'll workshop it.
We are about to have ourselves a time, people. We're going to head on down and meet some friends of mine that were part of a very vital charity concert back in the summer of 1998. That concert was known as Chef Aid, and one of the key performers was the immortal Chef. He comes in at number 20 in the 1998 Hottest 100 with a little song called Simultaneous.
Baby, you know you're the one for me. And all that I want to be is you and me and her simultaneous. You and you simultaneous loving, baby. Two or three simultaneous. Ooh, come on. Have an open mind. Pull my trigger down. The last cold turkey brass, make it fast, take my ass to town. Have an open mind, send my cows away. Ring my bell, you fat pig, well, what the hell's today's your lucky day? You and me and her, simultaneous, you and me, and we're on a rider. Simultaneous loving, baby, two or three, simultaneous, ooh, come on.
That's Chef! He's come in at number 20 in the 1998 Triple J Hottest 100.
He's not a real person.
And he beat
Deirdre.
So many real people.
He is real. He's real in our hearts and our souls, baby. And our groins. Andrew.
David.
Talk dirty to me, baby.
Yeah, this is the second appearance from Chef.
Yeah, it is.
Making him more prolific in the Hottest 100 than many artists we know and love.
Yes.
Bless this countdown.
Stop treating it as an injustice. Yeah. He's a soul legend.
Yes, it's not an injustice. It's just what it is.
Yeah, obviously voiced by the immortal soul and funk legend Isaac Hayes. This, of course, taken from the South Park first soundtrack CD, Chef Aid, and indeed from that the episode which that is about as well. More so than No Substitute, this has an actual like song-like structure. A lot of No Substitute was spoken word and then joking with him doing the singing his own backup vocals, which is funny and sweet.
It's a good gag.
It's a good bit. But like, this works stupidly well as a song, I think. This is I love this a lot. I think it's very fun, very funny. Isaac Hayes' voice is obviously a vehicle for sexy perfection when it comes to soul and funk kind of ideas.
Sexy perfection was my nickname in high school.
But so much so that then, like, the parody is so close already.
Yeah, right. Because Isaac Hayes probably has had simultaneous partners in an evening. He was a handsome, sexy man. And Chef, in this point in the show, was like cartooned as like a womanizing kind of person with like a big number of lovers or whatever. And obviously this song is playing into that. The little bits here in the gags, like the asides, like they're the, oh, and maybe we're not a writer. Like,
yeah, the way it builds on the gag, because it obviously starts with like, it's the first joke, and the main joke that sets the whole thing up is you're singing this romantic song you assume to just one person. Yeah. And then it's just, and her.
Yeah, you and me. And her.
And then it becomes like the next joke is like, it becomes specific. Like, and we're not a writer.
Yeah. And then who does he say towards the end? Where he's like, no, I'm in on the radio, baby. Not like she's
Whitney
here.
Houston. Yeah.
And Whitney Houston. I'm in on the radio, baby. It's okay. Yeah.
The last part of the joke is that the old ball and chain gets mad at him for suggesting other people. Which is, I mean, like, that's kind of okay.
It's naff, whatever, who cares. Right. The end when he just breaks out of it, he's like, oh, hell with it. You and you.
So it's got, like, what we're saying is it's got, like, a nice build, right? Yeah. The joke builds. And because throughout the course of the song...
Because comedy songs built on one joke are tricky. Like, because the good comedy songs, you think of, like, Tripwire, and you think of Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah.
It just happens to be a song, and then you tell jokes within the song. This is not that. This is like, the joke is, it's a romantic or like sexual song, but it's about a man who wants to have a threesome or whatever.
Have an open mind.
Yeah, have an open mind. Yeah. Like, I prefer this to No to Substitute.
No Sub?
Yeah.
Big time.
I prefer No Sub.
Yeah, right.
I think like, it's a good gag, and you're right, the build is nice, nice, but I think I prefer the stylistic gag of No Substitute
with the spoken and the
backing vocals and stuff.
Yeah, okay.
And this is obviously more of a complete song, but in the context of it being a comedy song, I don't need it to be a complete song. I'm happier.
I'll say that. I'm happier
enjoying the No Substitute.
See, I'm okay with, in terms of comedy songs, with there being a lot of song and a bit of comedy.
Because this is just mainly a song.
Mm. It's mainly a song. Yeah. That's what I think is right. Like, to me, it succeeds in the sense of it being a comedy song. And there's always a hard cap with that. Once you're a comedy song, you can never not be a comedy song, right? Mm. And then that's going to determine ultimately how far you can love it. Mm. And for me, like, I don't really get into comedy songs that much. But on the scale of this compared to other comedy songs, it does really well. Mm. Because musically, that backing band is locked in so tight. It's funky. There's those great, like, funk horns going through.
Yeah, the horn section
the brass is
tight. Is
just so super cool. And I think the way that the joke builds and the way that it's written is, like, it's genuinely clever, I think. As far as a comedy song goes, it's a tick.
I also, like I mentioned when we spoke about No Substitute, I had the Chef Aid CD. It's pretty still somewhere
in my house.
Yeah, so there's nostalgia attached to this for me as well.
Yeah.
And I can't escape the fact, like, I have a very big soft spot for South Park. I know it's problematic and dumb in many ways, but like, I still have a soft spot for their writing when they're on point, and the early ones were on point in a different way. But this, I think, works as a funny, dorky, kind of jokey piece of comedy that happens to be encapsulated in a very rather tight funk rock jam.
Yeah. I don't think I know this, like, before this.
Before,
like, I didn't have Chef Aid. Mm.
Yeah,
I've probably seen these episodes. I can't remember watching the really early South Park.
We were talking about how it's weird that this got in, but Chocolate Salty Balls didn't.
Yeah, that was why I remember buying the Chef Aid record, was on the back of Chocolate Salty Balls.
We probably bypassed Triple J and went straight to Triple M.
Yeah, that would be it. Coming up next, we've got a double shot of Chef.
And like, that song, I'm sure meanlesses know that song. Like, it's from the episode as well. Like,
put them on your mouth and suck on.
Yeah, playing on the very subtle joke that balls has two meanings here.
And that chocolate can also allude to a person being black, which Isaac Hayes and Chef both happen to be.
Mm. No problematic casting in South Park, guys. Don't worry.
Oh, you know what's even more problematic?
Is Apu. Can we talk about Apu? Can we talk about the problem with Apu?
Nobody's mentioned this before. Matt and Trey, the creators of South Park, I saw a video of them in like a Q&A, and someone asked, like, how did you get Isaac Hayes to be the voice of Chef? And they were like, we don't really know. Like, we've been asking that question. And then they went on to say, like, we kind of wanted to do the voice ourselves, but apparently we can't do that. And it's like...
And fair enough.
I really hope you guys are making a self-aware joke right now and you didn't actually intend to do the voices yourselves.
Yeah, considering they do the voice of the Chinese shop owner themselves.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's many layers that we're not here to discuss the nuances of what's okay to joke about and so on. But this works,
sorry,
I think,
guys,
I think this works as a funk song, and that happens to be funny. I pay it quite hard.
I agree with that.
It's an homage to how, like, unsubtle funk music often would be. you can only do solid parodies like that when you fucking love the genre. And so to have like a legend of soul and a legend of funk music come in and be like, yeah, obviously it's all about fucking, let's just, you know, make fun of that. And, you know, do it within the context of what was at the time one of the funniest shows on TV. Like, it's perfect. Like, it makes total sense. Mm. It's just such a shame we won't ever get to talk about anything to do with South Park ever again.
Well, ever it would again. Be unreasonable for anything to be even higher than this in the Hottest 100.
Ever again. Ever again. Just kidding, at number 19, it's Wyclef Jean and the kids from South Park. This is Bubba Gibbs!
I go by the name of Wyclef Jean. We are the Refugee All-Stars. We salute the soldiers around the world.
Hell yeah.
This one is called Bullet in Your Bubba Goose.
Chef Aid album.
At number 19.
At number 19.
This opposite day.
In the Triple J Hottest 100.
Give us your keys, voting audience. You shouldn't be voting home tonight.
They always say, why aren't you out there catching the real criminals? And I tell them, well, you are a real criminal.
I'm fine. I'm going to vote for Teardrop. You're not. You're going to vote for Bubble Goose. And you're going to vote for the South Park version of Bubble Goose. I'm not. I'm fine.
I'm fine. I have some coffee.
I'm going to vote for Teardrop and no surprises. Okay? It's like, no, you're not. And I know you're not.
Let's get to the bottom of this. Adam, out of all the people in this room, I think you are the one most likely to have caught a bullet in your bubble goose.
I don't own a bubble goose. I didn't know what a bubble goose was when I first heard this
song.
I thought it was some kind of goose.
Yeah.
It's not. It's a
puffy parka.
It's like a pigeon rat.
What is it? It's a puffy parka. Like, it's what Big Shaq would have been wearing when he was hot.
Man's not hot.
Well, he wasn't.
No, sorry. When people thought
I'm
he was too hot.
I'm going to find out how old Big Shaq would have been in 1998. Be up.
It's also the jacket that is mentioned by the Wu-Tang Clan in Cream.
And Notorious B.I.G. mentions it as well at some point.
It's a hip-hop thing. The bubble goose or the low goose, yeah.
Okay, and break it down a bit more. Wyclef, who I only know as a Young Thug song. I know some hoes with good hair, fuck them too. So
okay, he was a member of the Fugees.
Not enough to connect it. Apparently,
He's just always been one of those kind of omnipotent and omnipresent figures in, like, you know, the outer stretches of hip hop. He's not as famous as Lauryn Hill, obviously, but you know, he's definitely more famous than
the other guy.
Pross. Pross only had one hit, and that was Ghetto Superstar, which fucking whips us.
What a hit, though.
Oh,
a hit.
Baby, if you're gonna have one hit, you might as well make it Ghetto Superstar.
Yeah.
Where's the South Park version of that?
Ghetto Superstar!
Carmen doing Old Dirty Bastard's verse.
Can't even change the law! Can it?
So, the answer to the question that I was talking about when the South Park guys were posed, how did you get Isaac Hayes to be the voice of Chef, was, we just asked. And I feel like them just asking has led to a lot of stuff actually happening. They said the same thing about getting Primus to do their theme song for a cartoon that had only just made a pilot. That's kind of huge that they just asked and Primus said, yeah, fuck it, we'll do it.
Because the thing is, like, now they're part of, they're multimillionaires and they're like Oscar winners. I think they're Oscar winners and they're Tony Award winners.
They could
winners.
Be EGOTs for all I know.
Like, oh, wow. But at the time, there was a serious countercultural appeal to South Park.
That's right,
if you wanted to be cool, tying yourself to the South Park name in whatever way was a good way to do it.
It was such a cultural phenomenon. And, you know, it was at its height right now. And I feel like that's how they made Chef 8 happen as well, in the exact same way, this album. They asked people to do it, and they happened to say yes. Rick Rubin produced the album. I was not previously aware of that. That is baffling. Look at some of the other guests that they got on here. Ozzy Osbourne, DMX, Primus got back in with it. The names that they got associated with this. Even Wyclef Jean.
Yeah, Joe Strummer.
Joe Strummer! It's crazy.
That's the thing. Like, I know, like, they measure, like, I know that, like, he was, like, on the downward end of his career and life. But that's it's Joe Strummer from The Clash.
It's Joe Strummer!
That's a holy goddamn musician there.
Yeah. I guess the point that I'm leading to here is what they asked for this song was, hey, Wyclef, we want to do a live version of one of your songs, but we want to put the South Park kids consistently singing along and commenting throughout the whole thing. And that's going to be one of the tracks on the album.
And Wyclef's like, well, sure, I'm sure they won't have too much of a presence in the song.
Oh, no.
Oh, they will.
Oh, they definitely do. It's just as well that Cartman, it's kind of funny the way he says Bubble Goose. Because if it wasn't...
He says it a lot.
He says it...
And high in the mix.
So high in the mix. Yeah. Like I mentioned the last song, I had the Chef Aid record, and...
So the tracks are divided between extended versions of songs that Chef himself sings in the show, and weird collaborations like this.
And also, but in the episode, Chef Aid... Not this one, but a bunch of the songs on the CD are performed in short segments.
Yeah, right.
The Joe Strummer segment's on there, the Ween segment's on there.
Yeah.
So I knew this song. I hadn't heard the original Wyclef Jean Bubble Goose song until I listened to it in preparation here.
It's pretty cool.
It's different sounding, right?
Yeah.
Like it feels like a straight up hip hop track, and this sounds more like, because this is obviously him and his band.
A little bit folkier,
It's folksier. That's the right way to put it. Yeah, there's a legitimate point that he's making. He was in the Fugees. He's a socially conscious rapper.
Yeah,
like, and he's making a point with this song as well, right? Like, it's, if you're a black man, it doesn't matter where you are, you can be a victim of violence. Mm. That's the point of the song.
When you say
like,
this song, you mean the original.
I just mean Bubble Goose.
No, especially this version.
Yeah, and then...
Because they're teaching kids.
Also, I don't know what Mac 10 is that Cartman keeps asking about.
Mac 10's another rapper.
Okay, there we go. Thank you. God damn it.
And Cartman, for some reason, thinks that Wyclef Jean is
Mac 10.
Which is just like a weird thing. Again, a weird joke if Wyclef Jean signed off on that. Like, one of the kids is going to continue to refer to you as another rapper that you may or may not like. Who knows?
Or do they all look the same to you, Cartman?
Did Wyclef hear the post...
Mix. Exactly.
I wonder.
That's what I want to know. Yeah.
God. Well, they've recorded it live, obviously. they brought all the kids in and, like, you know.
The idea of Wyclef sitting in the studio next to Trey Parker, who just keeps doing the voices as Wyclef's, like, singing and rapping along is sickening to me. Like, the idea of a fully grown man just going, "Sing it, Mac 10!" while Wyclef kind of, like, double takes and keeps singing about how black people are endemically trapped in a system of violence in America is so fucking bad to me.
This is America!
I mean, that's something I maybe should have considered a little bit more with this song that I didn't, but, like, that's kind of problematic, right?
Yeah,
but
this is a serious song. Problematic? Come on!
Yeah, the message of this song is...
It's serious.
Pretty serious.
But also, like, I don't think for a second that Trey Parker or Matt Stone are making light of the song. They're presenting themselves just like that the kids are singing along to it and, like, see, like, it sounds silly. And also, like, the voice, like, Carmen's voice is annoying. Like,
what?
and it's annoyingly present in the mix. But, like, I don't think they're making light of, they're not making fun of Wyclef Jean.
No, I don't think they are.
They're not intending to.
No.
But does it still trivialize the song? Because, I mean, Liz, there is a bunch of...
It grates.
But there is a generation that now doesn't take anything else away from that song, apart from the fact that, remember the South Park version? And Carmen kind of sounded funny the way he said Bubble Goose?
This guy, because I hadn't heard the original until today.
And also me, because I also own Chef Aid.
Yeah.
So is there something to be said about that? Like, maybe not so great.
But also, like, the song itself, Wyclef is in great form. He weaves, you know, amongst the beat of his backing band really well.
And the backing band's got, it's tight, they're locked in.
They're doing really great stuff.
Yeah,
like, there is something to be said about how cool it is to take what is a studio and producer crafted piece of hip hop music and turning into like kind of a folksy Fugees-esque jam song, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it's cool.
Yeah.
Like,
but getting back to what I was saying with joke songs, you know, like the joke to song ratio, there's a lot of song. It's aiming for a bit of joke and it's just not a funny enough joke. So it interferes with the song that is there.
Yeah.
So you end up with like, oh, this is, if this was a good version of Bubble Goose, it's ruined by the fact there are cartoon characters over it.
Or
and it's not funny enough to stand as a novelty song on its own legs.
That's the thing, right? It depends on the mood you're in when you're interpreting the song, right? Are you listening to it as a Wyclef Jean live kind of folk beat funk version of a song?
Well, you can't.
Whoops.
Yeah,
that happens to have the South Park kids singing along, or I listen to it as a piece of South Park pop culture.
Yeah, that's the only place that it sits in comfortably, because it doesn't sit in any other world comfortably. It sits in the world of being a South Park tie-in artifact.
Obviously, like, the kids are annoying in the song, but I still think it's not a terrible song to listen to.
I think it's pretty bad to listen to.
That's a fair.
Like, we've said everything. It's just like, why did, yeah.
And why here? Why in this way?
Oh, God, yeah, it's so high up.
What better place than here? What better time than now?
I have a question, though.
What better goose than Bubble?
The question I have, as has been documented with such things as Puff Daddy rapping over Kashmir and the entire Spawn soundtrack with their weird collaborations and mashups. Weird bands getting together and collaborating on songs was a thing in the 90s. Is the Chef 8 album just another example of that, or is it a parody of that? Is it trying to send up what is then a cultural thing of that time?
There's something to be said about the fact that it's a soundtrack that exists in like a narrative context within the show. Like, the Chef 8 album isn't just a playlist. They're bespokely made songs that have intros and outros from Isaac Hayes as Chef. The kids interrupt now and then. One of the songs is Cartman doing a cover of Come Sail Away. And, like, those kind of things are worth including because it makes the soundtrack feel like an actual, like, compared to, like, even soundtracks that I love. Like, I know it's naff to talk about Tarantino or whatever, but like, his soundtracks are good. And same with Edgar Wright soundtracks. Like, but essentially, they are, and particularly, not that this was an issue at the time, but particularly today in the age of anybody can stream anything for free, the idea of there being a soundtrack is fucking weird, right? Because like, it's all you, like, all you've done is make a Spotify playlist.
Yeah.
And grouped it, and that's it. But there is something to be said about the fact that at least Chef 8 is a bespokely made soundtrack where the songs, even if they're not original songs, and I think they actually all are, but even if they're not, they still have crowd ambiance, the kids interrupting, Chef doing an intro and outro.
Some skits,
right? But at least it feels like a dedicatedly crafted idea rather than just, here's some songs.
Yeah, and it ties into the in-universe
Chef 8 concept.
South Park event. Yeah.
And it is like, it's a record of how big South Park was at that point, that all these people are on it and that they get this high in this countdown or whatever. But yeah, I don't think they're lampooning that kind of collaboration. I think maybe the culture at the time just enabled that a little bit more.
Yeah.
Or in more surprising ways than it does now, and they just jumped on it, maybe.
As much as now we look back and be like, oh yeah, it is objectively annoying when Cartman sings. But like, at the time, again, South Park had a countercultural value. So playing them on Triple J, and there'll be people who thought like, oh yeah, it's funny. Like, oh my God, give me the South Park, kids are going to be in Hospital 100, that's so funny. And that is a funny thing to think of when you're a... And again, Triple J is a youth radio station, so teenagers would find South Park funny and find it funny that Cartman is going to be in the Hospital 100. There's a countercultural price that like that we pay as listeners to have the idea of it being cool or alternative is there with the fact that he does have an annoying voice on the soundtrack.
And unless we forget, this is not the last time that Trey Parker and Matt Stone will be in a Hottest 100.
Yeah, it's
true. We have to wait another 7 years, but they do come back.
Yeah.
They do come back in a very expletive-laden way.
The weirder that we can get the Hottest 100, the better I think it is.
That's the thing, right?
So, like, you know, ultimately, from the purposes of the countdown, it's super cool that the kids from South Park got in.
It's amazing.
You got to take your Cartman voice with your Dennis Leary.
If
you don't love me at my Cartman voice, you don't deserve me at my asshole voice.
At number 18 from the Chef 8 album. No, I'm kidding. This is Grinspoon with Just Ace. Just Matt's Grinspoon with Just Ace. That's coming in at number 18 in the 1998 Hottest 100. Back so soon after our previous dalliance with the Grinners. Black Friday coming in at number 22. Huge, huge song for me. Like, Grinspoon were one of my favourite bands for probably a good chunk of my years. From here, like, all the way through, up until they split up originally back in, like, I think it was 2013. And then when they got back together, like, I saw them when they opened for Chisel in 2013, they did that reunion tour, and then they got back together again, and now they're kind of back together permanently. Like, pretty much every phase, like, as long as I've been aware of Grinspoon, they've been a part of my life. And a lot of that centers around Just Ace, because it is just 2 minutes of absolute pop punk glory. It's rousing and silly and purely nonsensical, but it just fucking thrashes so hard that you are past the point of caring. When I spoke to Phil about the Guide to Better Living record for a feature I was doing for a place I was writing for at the time, I told him that watching the video for Just Ace was one of my first proper exposures to androgyny. And he was like, what? And I'm just like, you know, you're very kind of like dolled up in that video. Like, you've got like a little, like, pretty little hairpin and, like, you know, a bit of makeup and stuff like that. Yeah. And I'd never seen, like, a guy do that, really. Like, it was that, and it was the video for Pure Morning, and it was the video for Don't Want to Be Left Out, my Powderfinger. I was like, oh, blokes do that as well, do they? Oh, Dad won't be into that, but I'm kind of into it. And now I'm the raging queermo you see before me, so, you know, fucking Kel surprise there, what happened? I remember this video so vividly because it was also one of my first exposures to, like, moshing. Everyone's standing around during the in the verses, and then when the ba-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na, everyone just goes fucking bunter. It's so cool. Every time it come on, I was just, like, jumping up and down on the couch, you know? Like, it was just one of those sort of songs for me. And I still get a fucking sugar rush every time I hear this song. Like, those guys are in their early to mid-40s now, and they still play this song, and it still fucking goes off. So, yeah. It never, never fails to put a smile on my face. And in times like these, I think that's something we need.
I don't have the facts, but I imagine we've talked about songs before that kind of were incredibly successful, not in spite of them being written effortlessly and just kind of coming together, but because of it. I strongly imagine that this would have to be one of those songs, because it just is such a throwaway, but not in terms of, I'm not throwing that away as a term. I just think that's sometimes the best way that you can write a song. You throw it away and it happens to make the best cacophony of jangles as it hits the ground. That's exactly what's going on here. Like, everything is just so. It's just perfectly what it needs to be, and every moment just kind of sings for it. Even the fact that each kind of verse or chorus, they kind of don't have either, really. Like, it ends with "thanks, I'm over it" as a throwaway. It communicates that kind of, like, that effortlessness, that releasing, and then the rest is just running around being a hooligan in a concrete jungle. It's so fun.
The last week, Adam, you mentioned when we were speaking about Grinspoon, then you said you were interested in their relationship to punk rock. This, right? Like, this song is 100 seconds long, and that's it. They come in, they rock the shit.
This is the Hottest 100.
They come in, they, like, balls to the wall, rock hard, fuck you, blah, 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 done. And that's it. And it's just like, I haven't seen Grinspoon live, but I can just imagine that this is the kind of thing that when this comes on in the set, it's just like, no matter, like, it's, you know, when you're at gigs, and particularly now that I am aging and my body is falling to pieces, I don't go into the pit as often as I loved to as a teenager and men in my 20s. But there are still some times when I see bands and a certain song comes on, I'm like, nah, fuck it, I'm going to go be hurt heaps and just push my way into the pit and have to embrace that moment. This is one of those songs. So, like, I would be comfortably being the old man at the back nursing my beer and having my earplugs in, and then this song comes in, I'm like, fuck, go.
When was the last time you can remember you doing that recently? And a question for the room.
I stayed in the pit the whole time for Andrew WK because
yeah, my dude,
gotta cleanse the body with partying power.
I could see him right behind me, like, because I was on barrier, and I could just see a fist just wielding past me, and I was just like, that's
Mac.
And
I was like, yeah.
He's just fucking right in his face. It was beautiful.
DJ, I imagine that this is like every day for you. You're in the pit. Yeah. You live in the pit. You live true. On 10. Yeah, okay.
Pretty much.
The man, the legend.
Indeed. Yeah. When Grinners played at Big Day Out 2010, and I remember they put it to the crowd, like, all right, we've got time for a couple more, so we need to cut one of these songs from the set list. What have we got left? We've got No Reason, and we've got Just Ace. What do you guys want to hear? Do you guys want to hear No Reason? Do you guys want to hear Just Ace? Yes!
You are correct, audience.
We have a winner. And everyone's just like, fucking yes! Get out of my fucking way.
And what a hype way to start the song.
Even all the queer kids who are on the other side of the stage waiting for Peaches, everyone was just fucking getting into it.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, so sick.
It's one of those songs that encapsulates the feeling of, you know, when you see a live show from afar and you see the water bottles and beer spraying and
yes,
these, like, these gleeful parabolas that just, like, arc across the crowd. That's this song in energy. Like I said before, when we talk about pop punk music, my relationship to pop punk is at its best when I can enjoy it as pop music that has been punkified rather than punk music that has been watered down to appeal to the masses. And I don't think Grinspoon are at the point now where they're able to say they're watering down their sound. This just happens to be a pop song, so major key, so upbeat, so fast tempo, that it's just like all you want to do is shimmy and like get your face punched a little bit to it. It's just a fucking wonderful, yeah.
It's just joyous.
It's so
like,
joyous.
The whole time. Like, you know, and I was not super on board Black Friday last week, but like this is, it's just great. It's just great fun, and you really get the sense of how young they still are as a band. Reminds me a lot of Teflon. Jebediah. Like,
good call. I was about to say it has a Jebediah vibe.
Yeah. Ugh. Like that same
just
kind of
way to bring the mood down. Jeez.
Super fun, punky, joyous, youthful exuberance. It's great.
It's you can perfectly see this sounds like the kind of song that you would go to see an international band and who's opening? Grinspoon. I haven't heard of them. And then you'd leave and be like, man, that last song that Grinspoon played was so fucking fun.
That was
fun.
So good.
It's that kind of song. It's like unexpected, a little bit surprising, but just so high octane and optimistic in its sound that you just want to party. Yeah.
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 And the last pit that you went in for, Nathan?
I'm an old man. I can't remember.
Oh, okay.
That's sad, isn't it?
A 16-year-old, you would be noogieing you right now.
I guess. I think, because I went to Frenzel not that long ago, but I think there wasn't much of a pit. It was very late. I am an old man.
It was very late.
I was enjoying
11:30.
Look, you know, you've never had so much fun. Yeah, guys. It was 11:30.
At a Frenzel show, the only thing more fun than being in the pit is standing at the back and filling in the Live at the Wireless lines between the songs. So
the Live at the Wireless lines?
Yeah, because you know all the Frenzel Rom Live at the Wireless gigs so well that when they play the songs, you can make the jokes that they make on those recordings afterwards.
20-year-old recordings.
That is pure, man.
Because you remember the band so specifically.
Yeah, yeah,
because
exactly.
you spent your entire teenage years playing those live recordings in D4 block at Smith Hill High School.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, the intro of this podcast is based on the Live of the Wireless intro.
Exactly.
Triple J listeners, we've taken control of your radio station.
Live at the
So yeah,
mother
if you're wondering why
wireless.
We're taking control of your radio station, that's why.
That is why.
I have been wondering for
6 years.
6 years. Yeah. Not a burning question. I've been okay. I've been able to somehow get
it's
to
more
sleep
of a burning
night.
Question.
I just want to wish him well.
A hunker, Bernard Love.
Are we going to just round this out by making Bernard jokes?
Oh, why not?
Powderfinger's so fucking sweet!
Yeah. Isn't Powderfinger. Shut it! Powderfinger!
Number 17, it's The Living End with their cover of Tainted Love.
Cover?
Well, sometimes I feel I've got to run away, I've got to get away from the pain you drive. And to love me, the love we shared seemed to go nowhere. And I've lost my life, for I toss and turn, I can't sleep at night. Once I ran to you, now I run from you. This tainted love you give, I give you all a boy can give you. Take my tears and that's not nearly all. Well, sometimes I feel I've got to
That was Living End coming in at number 17 with their take on a beloved classic that you and I all know as Tainted Love. Why do we know it as that? Because that's what it's called.
Checks out.
Nathan.
Yeah.
Are you a Soft Cell stan?
No. I'm going to say no because I couldn't name a second song by them. I challenge anyone.
Do they have a second song?
Surely. It would suck if you were a one-hit wonder with a cover because that's not even you made nothing.
Alien Ant Farm.
Well, yeah. It would suck. That's what I'm saying.
It would suck to be Alien Ant Farm. I agree.
Counterpoint, Alien Ant Farm whips ass. So...
This song originally by Ed Cobb, recorded by Gloria Jones in 64, and then made very popular, obviously, by Soft Cell.
In 82 or something, 83?
Yeah, 81.
All right.
There's some very interesting stuff that went on kind of in between that, because when Gloria...
The Cold War.
Landing on the Moon.
And Nixon.
Yeah.
The Big Three.
Push the more iconic trio. Oh, wait.
History is what happens while you're waiting for a new Tainted Love cover.
Funnily enough, that was all perpetrated by Soft Cell. You can just see those two guys in the back as Nixon's like, I'm not a crook.
Not crook.
Yeah. Not a crook.
It is one small boom boom step for a man, dun, bam, dun, bam. But a giant leap for bam, mankind.
That would be great. Would I listen to it? I don't know. I would say I would listen to a concept album of a time traveler recounting events he's witnessing
as Soft
all
Cell
using Tainted Love. Yeah. But maybe I wouldn't.
Holy shit. I would write that, man. This is happening.
Oh, yeah. I think John
writing it would be way more fun than listening to it.
Yeah, I'm going to have a pretty free weekend this week.
Honey, don't disturb me. You're working here on my when opus. It's
finished. did you have something to actually say?
I did.
Sorry. Yes, please. Ignore our childish ways.
Way back then.
In the summer of 2018.
Before the entire history of the world by Soft Cell.
Remember that Mel's Barkley video where they insert themselves into all those, like, classic moments in music history? We should do that with, like...
Soft Cell.
Yeah. Like, the fucking Watergate scandal, fucking Soft Cell are just standing in the background.
It starts off so poetically as well, because it's just like you've got the single-celled organisms, of course.
Yeah.
And the primordial soup, and so...
The true Soft Cells.
The true Soft Cells.
And then two Soft Cells appear. Bam, bam.
Yeah. This idea's too good. Patent pending.
Yeah, please don't steal this idea from us.
If you listen to this,
I'm looking at you, Soft Cell.
If you listen to this in the future, have a quick Google of Entire History of the World by Soft Cell. See whether we make it.
Yeah.
So the thing that I was referring to that happened was Gloria had another shot. Because the single that she brought out in 64 didn't really make any waves.
Mm.
Which is fascinating because this song is now, everyone knows at least...
It's one of the big three songs of culture.
Yeah. Mm.
So, but it was picked up in a very small kind of British club scene in the early 70s, which was all about soul. It happened in the north in the UK and it was referred to as the Northern Soul Club Scene. It's still a little bit niche. But one particular DJ by the name of DJ Richard Serling made the song incredibly popular within this scene. So much so that Gloria, on the momentum of that, decided to release the song again, and it again failed to do anything. But many people think...
Take the L, Gloria.
Yeah. Well, that was in 1974. Now, and many people think that's where Soft Cell were originally introduced to the song, in that club scene, because they released their...
Because they were time-traveling back to then.
Time paradox, because they wouldn't have been able to time-travel without the invention of that song.
You know that Tainted Love sound you're looking for?
Well, it's your cousin Marvin Cell.
But he's calling... It's Soft Cell calling themselves from the past.
I didn't know that Living End covered this. I hadn't heard this before.
I have a really strong memory of this being one of those Kazaa LimeWire-esque tracks Living End, Tainted Love, and...
.WMA, 128 kilobyte
.og.
Riff. Yeah.
And, like, I don't know if I ever got it or not, or if I remember seeing it at the point that I was already very skeptical of song things. I was like, well, that's not who that song's by. Move on.
Yeah, because you were searching for the original Soft Cell.
I must have been. Or maybe I was looking for Living End Tracks or something. I don't know. Who knows?
Okay. Well, you try to double back. Yeah, I was cool, I promise.
It was the first school project on Soft Cell. Don't worry about it. So this cover is a live recording. It was the B-side to, I think, All Torn Down. And evidently did pretty well. It's pretty fun.
Not having heard it, I had that fun experience of like, I wonder what kind of cover this is going to be when it started. And it starts off a bit different, obviously. And then when it like kicks in, I'm like, all right, it's just psychobilly. I'm here for this.
Yeah.
It's fucking fun, rapid, fast psychobilly punk.
I think it really, takes off when you get to the solo.
Of course, yeah.
Like, because that's what this era of Living End is all about, I guess.
The snare hits for the bomb are suitably fucking huge.
Yeah.
He's punishing that goddamn snare drum in those hits. So that's cool. It sounds tight.
Bringing out a new one each time he does it.
Yeah, exactly right.
Just goes straight through.
Each
individual one is like dun, and the second dun is on another one. Like, but I think what this does so well is capture that sense of fun that Living End have live so well, particularly like all that early stuff is just fun, fast psychobilly, and it's great. And you can get a sense listening to this of them playing that live and everyone just getting on board.
You can fully see this being like our live thing when they're like, because I feel like it's a bit long,
I think so too.
But like, I can fully see it being like a live highlight. And it's an easy vote in, like, because everybody knows the Soft Cell thing and it's fun and people have like a cheesy affectation for it all. And then Australia's favourite new weirdo psycho punks I do a cover of it. Of course you're voting for it. Yeah. Like,
and
obviously.
Also, I think it reflects well that it was a B-side that got popular on the radio as well. It's not like they were pushing this as a single. Look at this wacky cover we did. It's like, not that at all.
Yeah.
They put on a fun live track as a B-side and people were like, we do like hearing this still.
That's what I like from my B-sides. Like, you hate hearing the songs that were just crappy enough and you're like, oh, well, we recorded it and it's definitely not good enough for the album. You want something that's a bit different and wouldn't suit the album or a live recording of a cool cover.
And I think it's a good translation into Living End language.
Yeah, agreed, The solo is tons of fun. Chris just, you can see his smile when he's playing this, just hearing a song, you're like, oh man, he's loving this shit. Yeah.
Sometimes solos are really insufferable, and I think one thing the Living End as a band do really well is make solos, you know,
sufferable.
the kind of spectacle that they're meant to be.
Because a true, like, even like some of the great iconic guitarists, like, if you don't like Led Zeppelin and you watch, like, Jimmy Page doing a solo, you're like, fuck off the stage, man. Like, no one cares. Like, if you love the band, then you, like, appreciate the solo. But they are, like, there is no musical equivalent that's closer to jerking off than a guitar solo. Apart from maybe a drum solo.
Like, have you seen It Might Get Loud?
No.
It was that doco with Jack White, The Edge, and Jimmy Page.
I'll never watch that documentary.
Right?
That's insanity to me, man. That sounds like the worst thing in the world.
I was going to say, like, that is exactly what you're describing. Yeah. Like, there is no fucking way anyone would be like, yeah, I used to think guitar solos were a bit wanky, and then I watched It Might Get Loud. Which is literally just the three of those dudes sitting around and playing guitar for like 90 fucking minutes. Oh man, it's incredible.
And the thing is, like, not contemporarily, but I have a huge amount of love for Jack White. Like, particularly the White Stripes. And I have a bit of love for Led Zepp. And there's also you too. Jack White's, like, obviously, like, one of the modern, like, guitar rock guys. Jimmy Page.
I mean, so is Chris Chaney. Like,
yeah.
To bring it around, like, he's always kind of had that kind of just like, oh, get your head off it, Daryl. But when you see it live, it doesn't fucking matter because...
He's playing slide guitar with a beer.
Yeah. Or, like, standing on top of fucking Scott's bass and you're just like, motherfucker.
Yeah, you don't get tired of those kind of... Obviously, like, psychobilly's not an Australian thing, obviously, but like there's something specific about the Living End. They never sound like they're so punk rock that they'd be alienating to someone who isn't into punk rock outside of them. Like, tons of people I know will love the Living End but would never say I like punk rock music.
And vice versa. That wouldn't get into like Zombie Ghost Train and like Tiger Army and shit like that.
Man, gone too soon. But there's something about them that definitely is punk rock and is definitely like has that psychobilly, which like I throw the term around very casually because I know it very well, but it's just punk rock's rockabilly. But there's something about them that still channels those things. And in a cover like this, you forget that they are like potentially playing music that is of an alienating genre because it's just fun and rock music-y. Mm. But yeah, this is a very fun cover.
Not necessarily wanting to encourage our listener base to do anything here, but Andrew, what is your price for charity to sit down and live stream you watching It Will Get Loud in its entirety?
And commentating it. Honestly,
well,
well,
you can say what you want. Yeah. But I feel like you will
surely
anyway.
The price is higher if you're not allowed to talk about it.
If I'm not allowed to talk about it, it's like...
You're allowed to like grunt and go...
If I can like Twitch stream it and or I can get a rabbit room up and do it like that. If I had like... 3 viewers of people who were in this room, I would do it tonight. Like,
oh, so you wouldn't even do it for a price for charity? We could probably
well,
get.
You can, wow, you really hate
some,
charity.
Get some money for the kids.
Oh, God, yeah.
I'd rather not do it for charity.
If you give money to charity, then I won't do it at all. But just give the money. You shouldn't need a reason to give to charity, man. Like, you shouldn't need me to suffer.
Hey, you turned that around.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay. Just give to fucking. What's a cool charity?
Fuck,
the
I don't
UN.
Know.
That's
SIDS for what? Kids. I don't know.
SIDS? What?
No. To all of you.
You tell like street charity people that you already give to the UN.
Gonna have to keep around to remember that one. No. The Tasmanian tree people, they're good. I give to them. I can't remember what it's called.
I am no tree.
Yeah, I get, like to stop the logging in Tasmania. That's a worthwhile charity.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you give $1 million to that charity, then I will.
What?
Downloading the movie.
Hang on. You went from you'll do it for 3 people watching you and no charity to a...
Varied man.
Yeah.
This is the level of commitment you'd get of my commentary for the fucking movie.
What if people left a 5-star review saying, Andrew will get loud.
Yeah. then I definitely
hashtag
do it.
Andrew will get loud.
There you go. And just the one? Yeah.
Yes,
I guess
just
so.
The one. Yeah.
That's all it's going to take, man.
Just the one 5-star review.
And then I'll figure out how to set up a Twitch account or a rabbit room and do that.
I had a rabbit room once. I just locked them all in there. It was really fun. It was like in The Sims, where you put all the Sims in the pool and then you take out the ladder.
Wow, yeah.
Oh.
Do they eat each other? I feel like that's what
happened. Oh,
yeah. Classic rabbits.
I called the big one Bitey. And number 16, this is Josh Abrahams and Amiel.
That was Carbon, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I got 2 pale hands up against the window pane. I'm shaking with the heat of my need again. Starts in my feet, reverbs up to my brain. There's nothing I can do to revert the gain. I'm looking down to the street below. There's nothing in the way they move to show. They too know what I know. They too hunger for the beast below. Listening to the radio, I feel so out of place. There's a certain something missing that the treble can't erase. No, you can tell just by looking at my face. A word about my weakness. I'm totally addicted to bass. Wow, wow.
Josh Abrahams, featuring the silky smooth vocals of Amiel, at number 16 in the 1998 Hottest 100. You might as well face it, you're addicted to bass.
It's very hard to not think of that song, at least for me.
Right?
Yeah.
What song's that?
Addicted to Love.
Bye. Might as well face it, you're addicted to love.
Oh, Tom Jones.
No.
God damn it.
Are you sure?
Robert
you
Palmer, wish. Baby.
Robert Palmer.
Right.
Yeah.
Is he from Wales?
No, I think he's
my
English?
Interest is waning.
Right.
So funny that this song is just like so ubiquitous in Australia. Because Josh Abraham, what he's Pure Tone. Is like
oh, I thought
his...
you were talking about Robert Palmer for a second.
Yeah. Because he goes by Pure Tone as his like DJ name or whatever. But this is like an actual like crossover pop hit. Like not just like a club banger.
Yeah, like, we all knew this song from growing up.
Yeah. I haven't heard it in 15 years, but I think
Adam,
even
it's a wow song.
Yeah,
definitely. And it's so fascinating how that hook has kind of outlived the song in certain ways. Like, no one talks about the song as a whole, but, you know, like, a wow, wow, like, that it kind of lives on its own apart from that.
The earworm ability of that fucking hook. Haven't heard this song in over a decade apart from revisiting it for this episode.
Yeah.
But I reckon not all the time, but a few times a year it would get stuck in my head.
You know what? I think I match you on that. And yeah, I think right? That's fairly remarkable.
Because it was everywhere when we were,
yeah,
whatever age we were, when 20 we were years ago. When we were into the bass.
Do you remember when that was in the bass epidemic of the late 90s?
But that actually was like a thing. Like, I have distinct memories of a mate of mine when I was in early high school or whatever, who had like a car. And it had just a massive
people being
sub
super
in
invested in bass,
super like, and in just car subwoofers.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was seriously like you would get into the car, you'd turn the bass level up on the EQ of the car stereo as far as it would go,
and you couldn't hear anything else. All you heard was throbbing.
No. Yeah. But it was just being there and being like enveloped in just low end.
Yeah,
and just pumping that as loud as you could and, and like and playing, you know, Dat Ali G song. Dat Ali G song.
Yeah. From Dat Ali G show.
Dat Ali G show.
I know the one you're gonna say.
Yeah, the jungle is massive.
Yeah. A to the L to the I to the G, and the G, that's me, that's me. R-I-C-K-Y to the C, Ricky C, Ricky C, Ricky C.
Wow. 10 out of 10.
I didn't see you in the car.
You must have been there, though. Well, there's no room for more than two with the woofers in the back.
It is true.
It's truly the era of, it's the culture where Pimp My Ride could be a hugely popular show when they would just replace someone's boot with a speaker.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, I kind of like using the boot. Well, you're going to love having heaps of bass.
Fan theory.
Okay.
Do you think our collective loss of interest in sick systems and subwoofers, etc., is what caused the global financial crisis?
I don't think it's a conspiracy at all. It was just like,
I think many economists
have gone on record.
The
numbers don't lie.
The numbers don't lie. Follow
think
the
about
money.
It. The whole market falls apart.
Yeah, and gives way to like kind of twee indie music with no bass.
Right?
Yeah. Follow the money.
So, the same year the global financial crisis happens, we stop listening to sick subwoofer bass. We start listening to Mumford and Sons.
Mm-hmm. And banjos just don't cost that much.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
right.
True.
Comparatively to cars and sound systems of said car.
Yeah, money.
I think there's a reason.
Make the world go round.
Indeed.
Always follow it.
Is that a Pink Floyd song?
So I think there's a reason that we got sidetracked after we talked about the hook. And I think that's probably because the rest of the song, like, it's kind of not that much. I think I want to give a shout out to Emile. I think she does a phenomenal job and her vocals sound incredible. I think some of the other sounds that happen outside of the chorus, a little bit lacking somewhat. It's kind of a bit nothing. You're just waiting for the chorus. And look, I think there's an art to that. And I think if someone said, like, that's the whole bit, I'd be like, cool, yeah, I pay that because you do hang out for that moment each time. But I also think that the thing that doesn't really work about this song is that it's pointing towards something that it itself isn't. It's saying, like, how good is bass music? How good is drum and bass? And I'm going, like, yeah, fully. I'm going to go listen to Pendulum right now, halfway through the song.
Bit, right? It doesn't feel like a big club hit.
No. The is pretty good and bassy, though. The verses are just the Amen break.
But also, it's important which version you listen to. There are two versions of this song. There's a domestic single and an international single. The international one, which the video for that is the Mad Maxi one, as opposed to
the other one.
Right.
That one stripped heaps of the bass out of the production of the song.
Really?
It's like there's hardly any bass in that song.
That's so hectic, man.
Fucking weird.
That's stupid.
It's like a cautionary tale, right? Like if someone was like a recovering heroin addict, they wouldn't want to do heroin while writing a song about heroin addiction because you're getting over it. You're getting over the bass addiction.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I was totally addicted to bass. I've been clean from bass for years.
Yeah. You have to just admit to yourself, you're totally addicted to bass. I know.
God damn it.
Only allowed to listen to Mumford & Sons and the Fleet Foxes.
I'm in the Luminaries.
Okay, can we not lump Fleet Foxes in with those other two bands? Because they are not the same at all.
If the new folk fits. If the warm twee vest fucking fits, mate.
Look, recovery isn't always an easy path, and sometimes, you know.
All I'm saying is that one of those bands is much, much better than
two of those bands.
Yeah, we'll let the fans decide
We get it, man. No. I love Mumford & Sons too. It's all good.
I just, by the way, if you are totally addicted to bass, or you have, you know, if bass is a little bit more than just a sound for you, you may have what's called auralism. At least that's what Urban Dictionary says. It's like the attraction, you know, like the actual attraction.
They're getting a boner for throbbing bass.
To certain kinds of sounds, yeah.
Hectic, man.
I don't know, like, the linguist in me kind of raises an eyebrow at this term because it doesn't have file or filia in it. It's ism, and I don't know about that.
But the fine people at Urban Dictionary wouldn't lie to you.
That's true. Right, I mean, they were right about thought.
Yeah, true.
Now I know.
Yeah, now it's in like songs. Yeah.
We should consult Dizzy Rascal, who had a very big hit a couple of years ago with the song Bassline Junkie.
Is he also in recovery?
I reckon he was addicted to bass at some point.
Part of BA.
And the premise of the song is that I don't need no X, I don't need no speed. A sick bassline is all I need. I'm a bassline junkie.
What about your girl Trainer?
Megan Trainor, all about that bass.
All about that bass.
So she might have a problem as well.
Yeah. Mm. And she wants no treble. That's the hardest. That's like that's like a dangerous way to compose a song.
She's in the car. She's like bass up full.
Oh, have Megan, you heard that? But all about that bass with just the bass. All the treble. It sounds like shit. It's amazing. Insane.
No.
It's just like, it just sounds good to me.
This is how I wanted it in the first place.
But like, this song obviously was like huge in Australia. It was like a ubiquitous earworm. But like,
yeah. Well, this was my first introduction to drum and bass.
Yeah, fully. It probably was mine as well, right?
Yeah. I wouldn't hear drum and bass for another 5 years until like Pendulum came.
If this is your introduction to drum and bass music, it's kind of like Mumford & Sons being your introduction
to folk. I'm really into folk music. Someone pulls out like some like Cohen and Dylan records and they're just like, yeah, man, that song that like I really fucked it up this time.
Yeah. Mm,
love a good bit of folk music. But this ended up being a hit in the UK dance charts in November 2001. So many years later. Like, it just finally dawned.
Why then?
It's so unique, right? Yeah, it's just...
Was it like re-released or remixed or something?
Just a slow burn, I guess.
That's a real fucking slow burn.
Outside of Australia.
I just can't... So much happened in that time.
Was this song in ads? Or like, yes, why do we know it?
Yeah. It was in ads.
It would have been heavy airplay on all stations.
Well, obviously, it made it got 16. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
This would infuriate the parents. This is like classic parents saying this isn't real music.
This?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Huh.
You know, it's just like, nah, buddy, nah, mate. Zeppelin, that's real music. Shut up, Dad. Go watch It Might Get Loud.
Even better, watch this great stream that's going on right now.
Oh, man. You gave a bit of shit to, you know, kind of like waiting around for the chorus or whatever, but I kind of like that compare and contrast.
Yeah.
Like, that works for me. I kind of dig that. Especially because, like, so much of modern dance music, you feel like you're waiting around for it. Like, it's a post-chorus world now. Like, you have like a bit that you sing and then you have to wait for the, you know, it's like you chop up what you've just said and that and turn that into its own hook. Like, I don't have a problem with it, but like it's a very different dynamic to the music of this time. And I really think Amiel really carries that as a vocalist.
Like, if she wasn't as good as she is, the song would not nearly be to the standard that it is, because I think like her immaculate vocals do a lot more lifting than they should have.
Yeah, this is the last time we hear from Josh Abrahams, but it's not the last time we hear from Amiel.
Right, I was going to mention her other big hit, just in case we don't talk about it, but we do.
We do. This came into the Hottest 100 of 2003?
Yeah,
maybe 2004. It was a song called Love Song.
Yep.
Which...
you'll know when you hear it.
Yeah.
For sure.
Because it had fuck in its chorus, was very popular on Triple J, and then they took out the swear in the chorus, and then it became a hit on commercial radio.
I don't think I've ever heard the version with fuck in it. You've done me a surprise. You've done me a heckin' surprise.
Heckin' surprise.
Well, yeah, there's a whole lot of those in the archives. For instance, in the original version of Little Lion Man, they actually say cunt.
Guys, you got to turn down for the... Okay, also fuck.
Out of the deal. Out of the deal right there.
But yeah, I'm a total fucking apologist for this song. This is like instrumental to my childhood and like instrumental into like discovering like a heavier side of dance music. It's like this and Here's Johnny. This was like a fringe hit at the time. But now dance hits in the chart are just part of the chart. Like electronic dance music has more or less integrated fully with pop music.
That's a good point.
You know?
But the, but this was like a sincere crossover hit.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
In a time where that was unique.
And as much as it's hard for us to imagine it in a club setting, like it's weird thinking about it being a big club song 3 years later in the UK. But
it is a D&B track, right?
Yeah. And as a crossover pop hit, it's huge, of course.
And that addiction sticks with me to this very, very day.
There's help available. Here's this Fleet Foxes album.
Nice.
It's really good. I swear.
Check out the song Little Lion Man.
Fuck. No, dude. No.
Wow, they say comes a lot on this album. That brings us to a definitive and conclusive end to yet another episode of Hottest 100s and Thousands. Thanks so much for listening. We love you. We appreciate you. God damn it, do we respect you.
That's true.
Before we get out of here, we're going to pick our favourites and our least favourites from this week. And we're going to continue that never-ending story.
Ooh. I would take any excuse to play a grab of that.
Mm.
Any.
Falcon! I try you!
Yeah. I wish he was real.
Don't we all?
So much. He's a cool guy.
Oh, what a leg.
You just wish he was your best friend.
A good buddy.
Yeah. I wish he was my best friend.
Okay. I reckon I'm going to go with Just Ace for my favourite. And this is a tough one because I actually, at least in part, did genuinely enjoy everything that was on offer this week. Probably simultaneous, I guess.
No change to the champ or jump?
No changes. Like, keeping Teardrop and keeping Drinking in L.A.
Yeah, my favourite is a weird one for me because none of these are particularly either way, right?
I'm pretty cool on all of them. Yeah, like, I'm lukewarm on love.
I'm going to give my fave to Tainted Love. It's nowhere near the champ that is Teardrop. And my least favourite, I'm going to give it to Addicted to Bass. It's not a terrible track, but I have no desire to ever hear it again. But my chump is easily Drinking in L.A. by Brand Van 3. Billion.
I'm putting a bullet in the bubble goose. I'm surprised no one's joining me on that.
Oh, no, I'll join you.
Don't worry. Yeah.
You'll meet me on that.
Yeah.
Two shots to the goose. And my best is easily Just Ace, because I think it's an ace track. My champ remains Teardrop, not likely to change.
So. Yeah, fully right.
Yeah, and my chump is Drinking in L.A.
Least favourite, bubble goose. Chump will remain Metallica, The Unforgiven 2. It's a toss-up between Addicted to Bass and Tainted Love, I think. Maybe I'll give it to the original track.
Oh, right.
Addicted to Bass. I'm going to say it's my favourite. Right. But, like, pretty, like, it's as a five, it's, like, it's so high up.
Yeah.
This is a weird 20 to 16, but that's okay. I'd say my favourite is Addicted to Bass, but that's not going to take the place of Teardrop.
Well, things are going to get even harder from here. My God, the next 15 songs are beastly. So, until then, comrades, on behalf Mr. Nathan Harrison.
Bye.
Mr. Adam Buncher.
Sweet dude.
Mr. Andrew McDonald.
Screen again. And get here.
My name is Anthony. Everything is good to you tonight.
You were like a little bit wibble and bob in there too. It was good. I liked it.
Fucking weird one, man. I don't know how to do a Cartman voice.
That speaks well of your character. That if you on your Tinder bio doesn't know how to do a Cartman voice,
super swipe.
Yes, oh, big old Star Wars.
It's a match. You and Wendy like each other. Listeners, we've taken control of your radio station.
Oh, hey there! What?
Hello.
What?
Ready? Hello, listeners. You are listening to Triple J's Live at the Wireless. That's not the sound we require. If you just tuned in, we're the Beatles.
Moving right along.
Can we have an umbrella for the front row, please? Thanks again for listening.
Welcome to Live at the Wireless.
You should see the crowd. It's huge.
On Triple J. But it was not your fault, but mine.